Hey, thank you very much, Olga, for being here. Olga Ukolova is joining us today at the Relay Bitcoin session number, I don't know, I think it's more than 20 now. We're doing this. Every week we have an episode, or every 2 weeks we have an episode coming out where we try to interview as many people as we can. Interesting people from, you know, Bitcoin technology, like you are, like very people who are deep into the technological topic, but also people, you know, from politics, from business. We had like big investors on the podcast. We had a Swiss representative of the parliament on the podcast. We had the president of the Bitcoin Association Switzerland on the podcast. You know, so just different interesting people that are giving their life and blood and work and sweat to this this project, Bitcoin, which we obviously also very much into it with our app. So thank you very much for being here, Olga. And my first question would be, how the hell did you end up here in Switzerland? Because 10 years in Switzerland and in the Bitcoin space, because 10 years ago, I've seen you've actually completed your studies as a medical doctor in Ukraine. How did this come by? How did you end up here?
It was only 10 years ago. Seems like a whole new life. But so probably to keep the story still short, I am a medical doctor by my background, and I'm a neuroscientist, and I was always fascinated by how the brain works, and I was always into the process, into understanding how the processes of human body work. So I was always into trying to understand the logical correlations between something that can happen in human body and then can consequently lead to some outcomes, which is basically common logic skill right now. At some point, the story is pretty simple. At some point, I understood that I do not want my parents to sponsor me because I had a scholarship, but still in order to live in the capital, because I wasn't born in the capital of Ukraine, I moved there. And I understood that I want to just leave my parents' wallet and to make my own money and to support myself as I can without their help. So I got into the classical IT sphere at that point, like the common narrative of becoming a QA engineer, the manual one, nothing fancy. Then with time, I built myself up to be a project manager. Like talking to people, understanding how the products are built, talking to the teams, managing the teams, providing results, managing budgets and all that. And at some point there was, we started thinking, bringing a couple of other team members, we started thinking about whether we can do something with AI related stuff. At that point, AI was booming. It was only at its beginning of the evolution, and of course it resonated with me because I'm a medical doctor and I understood that neural networks in programming are trying to mimic the neural networks in the human brain, which they do not, disclaimer. Still, it fascinated me, and we got this idea of creating a censorship resistant and distributed system for AI computations, for the heavy load ones. That was, I think, 2017. And we gathered like a bunch of people. Someone chipped in some funds, someone chipped in their knowledge, someone chipped in their academical background, and we just started working on that. That was the moment when I think I started getting into, and we started looking for the technology to base it on. Of course, we could have used like SQL database and all of that, but that wasn't really the solution to our situation. And we got to know more about the blockchain technology at that point. And of course, we did fall. I mean, I had heard about Bitcoin probably in 2014 or 15. because in 2013 and 14 we had this war with Russia and Ukraine, which like everything was on fire and people needed to find a way to send and receive resources, which is money, when they were on the war field or something. So it was like perfect use case for Bitcoin at that point. But I was not really, I was involved in the war zone things, but not that much in Bitcoin one, because for me it was still a bit sketchy and I was very careful with that. So in 2017, we understood that probably this new blockchain technology, whatever it is, can help us to solve the goal of our project. And of course, at first we fell for the promise of Ethereum, of being the supercomputer, of being scalable, mm-hmm. to provide a lot of resources, because that's what we needed. So we started building our project on top of Bitcoin, on top of Ethereum. I think we spent like more than half a year on that. We did have a lot of nodes on the testnet. Everything went well. So from our side, everything was pretty good. But at some point, we understood that we actually were building Ethereum, and we were fighting the bugs of Ethereum much more than we were building the project itself, which did not make any sense. And we started thinking whether we can optimize. And also we understood that in order to create the project that we need, Ethereum lacks a couple of very important and very core principles. For example, confidentiality or scalability or privacy. And we cannot find it in Ethereum. So we understood that we actually need to switch. Otherwise, the project is just doomed.
From the ground up, the Ethereum blockchain was not really suitable. Like, even if you know the small box and things, you could argue that okay, it was just too early. Maybe in a couple of years, Ethereum will be ready, and then it's gonna be the perfect blockchain for this use case. Or did you find like fundamentally, it's from principle based, this is not gonna be the blockchain that will be the one for most use case or for that use case, but we need to find another one, and then you got into Bitcoin because of that?
We faced both. So at first, yes, the core idea of our project was about freedom and how we wanted to put it, to bring sovereignty to AI agents. We even have our free AI manifesto for that, where we describe our principles, and we understood that those principles cannot be fulfilled and implemented technologically if we use Ethereum. So the fundamentals, yes, they were not aligned, and we understood that if we would proceed with using Ethereum, we would not deliver, even in front of our own eyes, what we committed to. So that was one of the reasons. And the second reason was that all the promises of Ethereum being ready or becoming more scalable, bringing all these shardings and all other mystical words, they would take time. And if they ever get released, we did not have that much time to wait for them. And that was a huge dependency, mm-hmm. which we were not able to work with, taking into account our own schedule and our own commitments, and it was just not working on any level.
I see, but you could also argue, or I mean, critics could also argue that Bitcoin is also not ready yet. It's also not. There's also room for improvement in terms of privacy. There's also a lot of room improvement in terms of scalability. Like Lightning is not really ready yet for everyday users, so how did you think about that then? Because you switched, did you finally switch to Bitcoin?
Yeah. So first our transition was very smooth. So first we switched to RSK, because RSK is a project which uses Bitcoin blockchain, and they try to merge that with Ethereum-based smart contracts as a second layer. At that point, we were thinking like, why not? should work. I mean, okay, Bitcoin as a base layer can provide us with censorship resistance and many other qualities that we need. And probably we just need to replace the blockchain layer and still add the smart contract one from Ethereum because they seem to work. They didn't. So again, like very like failed attempt. And also RSK project, as good as it was, at least I haven't been following them much. They had only, I think it was only one person who was developing the whole protocol, and that person was also in charge of a lot of operational stuff in the company that was governing the project. So basically my team, which was like 10 developers who were constantly contributing to their repos, and we on somehow became the development force behind RSK. And at some point I just needed to stop this because I did not want my guys to work for someone else and not even getting the feedback from them, because simply not because the guys are bad, but because they didn't have time to provide any feedback or look mm-hmm. at the PRs or something like that. And yes, you're right. Bitcoin at that point was not ready for something like our project. But at some point we met Giacomo Zucco. You know him, of course.
And mm-hmm. He's an investor in Relay. Yeah.
Yeah, and he explained us the concept that he had, the concept of RGB. At that point, it was just very, very simple concept, tokens over Lightning, full stop. That's it. Assets over Lightning, tokens over Lightning. That's it. Nothing more. Like colored coins, but more private and more scalable. Basically, that was the.
Okay, so the idea of RGB, and I know you are deeply involved in RGB. We will talk more about this. But maybe for people who are listening to this who don't know what it is and not familiar. So, Bitcoin basically is this base layer, the basic blockchain, which is technically very easy, very simply set up, and also kind of stupid in a way that, but also very secure because of that. And it's the most secure blockchain, and it's also the less complicated blockchain. And for example, Ethereum, there's a lot of functionality in the base blockchain, and it's going to be developed more and more and more, which adds complexity. Then, you know, less security, less privacy is what follows. And Bitcoin basically has a base layer which is very secure yet very simple, and then there are different layers being built on top of that. For example, one is the Lightning layer that we've already talked about with some guests, like for example the one with Christian Decker is amazing, or also the one of Oliver Gucker. Who works at Lightning Labs. So they explained very well what Lightning can bring as a second layer technology. And then RGB, for example, is also a second layer, or maybe third layer technology. I don't know.
It's both the third layer.
Yeah. Interesting, cool. So Olga will tell us more about this very soon. So the idea is that Bitcoin is scaled and developed further in different software layers. Like the internet, for example, the internet also has one base layer, one protocol, which is very simple. And then it has, I think, seven layers on top where that have different functions and add scalability and functionality to the whole thing. So I think what the idea of Bitcoin is really to scale this in different layers. And one of them is RGB. So can you tell me tell us what RGB should bring Bitcoin, what we will be able to do with it, how it will change Bitcoin in the next years, maybe?
Sure. So we got to know about this idea of RGB, and we saw the potential of it, because even regardless of the fact that it was supposed to be this very simple layer two solution for tokens or assets, when we got into talking more with Giacomo, with Peter Todd, because there were the core idea of RGB is based on Peter Todd's work on open timestamps and single use seals. So, and the more we started talking with them, the more we understood that even such a very simple use case of private tokens on Lightning or on Bitcoin, they are very complex and they should be designed in a very proper way because, for example, you already have a lot of solutions which do not provide what they claim to provide. Colored coins failed in delivering some tokens over Lightning use case. Omni does have Omni Vault also, which is the Lightning solution, but all of them are still not that much scalable and not that much programmable and not that much private, definitely. So we jumped into the development of RGB for two reasons. First, because the potential of the technology and the idea of the technology was very solid. And secondly, because we understood that that can be the layer that we actually need for our AI-related project and for any other technology or product that we were to build. So basically, we were just creating the steps that we needed, and our interests aligned with the interests of many other Bitcoiners, and we decided that, why not? Let's do this. That's how the whole RGB development started. And RGB's been in development for almost 2 years, I can say, one and a half, two years. And it's planned to be released by the end of this year. So a lot of people keep asking us, like, when RGB is ready. It's been like 5 years or so, it will never be ready. And there's all this skepticism. But no, actually, if you even compare some parts of Lightning development and the speed and quality regards, and you compare that to RGB development, you can actually see that we're not that bad and we're moving very fast and very efficiently in our development and design. And
So by the end of the year, RGB kind of in the next Bitcoin update, like in the last one, Taproot was activated or is being activated right now. And then by the end of the year, RGB will be updated in the next update, you say. And what can we expect from that?
Well, RGB, this is the thing. Unlike Lightning and Bitcoin, RGB does not require any changes into Lightning network or into Bitcoin protocol. It can be released whenever it's ready. And basically, it's up to us to understand when it's ready and to define what means ready. Because, for example, some people ask me, when can they play with RGB on mainnet or testnet already? And RGB, by its design, it's not a blockchain. It's not a peer-to-peer network like Lightning. It's a directly acyclic graph, it's a DAG, which means that all the information is stored on the client side, on the side of the node, and it does not pollute, it does not depend on the blockchain layer that much. It can leverage a lot of stuff, but it does not, it cannot disrupt the basic layer. It cannot add something crucial to it, but it leverages everything the basic layer has. So if someone is reckless enough to start issuing RGB tokens or RGB assets already right now on Bitcoin mainnet, they can actually do it and nothing on Bitcoin itself or on Lightning will be broken. But the thing that I also need to mention is that from the concept of issuing just assets over Lightning or over Bitcoin as layer one, we moved, the moment we saw the potential, we moved from this one simple use case of RGB being a token protocol to creating a fully fledged and very complex smart contract system for various different types of rights management, like bearer rights management, for example. RGB can also be used for, again, AI computations with time, and then very huge amount of cases where you need to manipulate with company's assets or shares. So basically, the amount of use cases that RGB as a smart contract system can now cover is a lot more than one use case of assets and tokens over Lightning. And at some point, one can understand that it's even more than Ethereum can provide now, because Ethereum is kind of famous for covering most of the use cases that are out there with their smart contract system. And now we actually can say that we finally have something even more robust and even more scalable and even more usable on Bitcoin with RGB. So it's not just possible anymore.
That sounds fascinating. I wonder why people don't talk about this more. Like, why isn't this more in the press or on Twitter or on social media in general? Because that's the only thing that I hear all the time. Like, why don't you, as an app, as an investing app, why don't you offer Ethereum? Because Ethereum is, you know, technically so much more advanced. There's all these stuff like ICO and ICOs and tokens, mm-hmm. and NFTs and, you know, all these interest in smart contracts and all these different things that you could do with Ethereum that you cannot do with Bitcoin. My answer is, you know, you wanna have a savings technology long term. That's Bitcoin. Ethereum really does not provide the same characteristic like this. It's not the digital gold that we are looking for. We are a savings app. We're not a, mm-hmm. Speculations app and whatever. But I'm also thinking that, you know, this whole DeFi, decentralized finance, all these use cases that require smart contracts and tokenization stuff is interesting. I just don't think it's the right blockchain for it, because Ethereum itself is not it's not as secure. It doesn't have enough hashing power. It's too centralized. It can, you know, it can be changed all the time. And it will be changed all the time. It's very experimental on the base layer. That's not what we want for a long term for having decentralized finance cases and transferring millions around and billions around. Mm-hmm. But I always thought, you know, decentralized finance on Bitcoin would be great. So you're telling me basically that by the end of the year we are ready with this, which is which is amazing.
Yeah. That's exactly, because so from Ethereum community, if you ask me, they did a couple of things that played out good and bad at the same time. First one is, what I'm grateful probably for them is for showing which use cases technology needs to cover right now, which use cases are in high demand, what people actually need, how people actually work with their money, with their assets, with their values, and all that. That they did perfectly.
Good first experimentation, validation of user needs, basically, what the market wants. But
that was huge marketing research, basically. That the system was providing marketing research. Which
we can now use on Bitcoin.
Probably what they did fail at is the ability to provide the solutions for those demands, the proper solutions. Because of course you can dig a hole in with a microscope in your garden, but for that you actually need a shovel, not a microscope. And they did cover the use cases, but in a very awkward way, with a lot of trade-offs that serious people that work in finance probably cannot go for. I mean, they cannot trust their money, especially if it's like big amount of it. They cannot trust their money to the technology that does not scale or goes down every five minutes or gets hacked every 2 days. It does not bring any psychological comfort, and you understand that you might lose all of your assets or at least a huge chunk of it every moment now. So this not being able to deliver the proper way to solve the problems, that was what they actually probably were very bad at. And on the other hand, they tried to simplify a lot of things, because this whole Ethereum madness started with the DAO hack also. It's, you can put it like this. And a lot of people were very greedy for easy money. And this is why they were not very educated on how to manage their money, what to do with them, how to store the information, how to store the keys and all of this. And they were fascinated just simply by the idea of getting the easy money. When Ethereum community had this huge amount of pressure from the users, they tried to simplify the solutions and simplify the design narratives of the products, of the technologies, just to fit the market needs as fast as possible. And then, of course, just go down, get hacked, but they would like create an ICO already and have enough money to deal with lawyers or whatever. So a lot of very good concepts at that point were crucified and were simplified. And it was reduction, like how in Latin it's called reduction ad absurdum. It were, for example, the very simple and very good concept of smart contracts itself. It's a very needy, it's a very good thing to have, and it's a very technologically advanced concept. And it was not introduced by Ethereum community in the first place. It was introduced in Bitcoin. It's just, as you mentioned correctly, Bitcoin's smart contract are very strict and very, very simple. But the whole idea started there. And because the idea at that point was very complex to understand, Ethereum community started simplifying the concept and creating a lot of biases in people's minds. And as the, one of the creators of RGB right now, I basically need to not reinvent, but rearticulate properly in a very proper way what a concept of smart contract is, and to fight all the biases that had been created by Ethereum community because they wanted to simplify the concepts and they did not have proper words to explain other people what the idea is about. So that's still a challenge that I'm facing, for example, because a lot of people come over and they start asking like how do I write a smart contract on RGB? How do I issue my assets or NFTs or something? And I'm always glad to answer the questions, but I also can very fast understand whether the person is coming from Bitcoin community or from Ethereum one, because of probably the terminology that they are using and the logic that they are using when they're asking the question. And it takes a lot of time to defy all this nonsense and all these biases that people have right now. But still, we do have many, many people who come over, and the passion, I can say, that they with which they're trying to understand RGB and work with it is just beyond anything, because they are very open-minded, and regardless RGB being a very complex technology, they still they put aside everything they know about Bitcoin, they put aside everything they know about Ethereum, smart contracts, computer science, and they just learn RGB from scratch, which is probably the best and the only way to do, especially when it comes to DeFi, because even the concept of DeFi was perverted by Ethereum community, because from classical financial point of view, DeFi is a very good thing to have, and people do need DeFi to operate within companies or to send any transactions outside their country to build very complex economical incentives, complex economical relationship. DeFi is there for this. DeFi is there not for ICOs, not for STOs. And yes, RGB can really help with that, but of course, only if people want to understand the principles and the paradigms, probably, of RGB in the first place.
I'm sure they will. Certainly, once it's live and people start playing around with it, and people start actually developing use cases that make sense and that are needed and demanded and used, then it's gonna spread like wildfire. I'm just a little bit astonished actually that it's not yet even in the Bitcoin community and way less even in the whole startup or finance community or economics community, it's not really talked about. But if this is gonna happen in the next half a year, then it certainly will. And it's interesting what you touched upon, the differences of these communities, like being in this whole, you know, crypto ecosystem. I say crypto because, you know, meaning the whole, not only the Bitcoin kind of maximalist path that I am on now, but in the beginning, I obviously, you know, had a very broad perspective on that, and also was, you know, part of different groups, interest groups, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it seems more and more clear that really fundamentally, even from a cultural perspective, these communities differ a lot. Like the Bitcoin community differs a lot to the Ethereum community, differs a lot to the Cardano community, differs a lot to the IOTA community, differs a lot to the Tron community, you know?
Exactly. Yes.
I'm sorry. the two biggest ones are obviously Bitcoin and Ethereum, which we talked about, and the main differences there are really the time preference, I think, and that's also a huge cornerstone of Bitcoin, because Bitcoin is scarce and is designed as this digital gold, and there can be all these fancy developments around upon this, but the basic is that it's a tool that helps you store long-term value. Mm-hmm. And that's also why probably the time preference is lower. Like we think in decades, not in months. And I think Ethereum people are thinking in months and quarters, and they want to push new things out, and they are on every trend, you know. Oh, this is ICO trend, there's this NFT trend, there's this DeFi trend, bam bam bam. And there's always things move so fast within the Ethereum community, which sometimes is good, but a lot of times, as you say, they simplify things too much, or they launch things too much, or they don't think things through, and it also attracts more get rich quick people, whereas Bitcoin really attracts and keeps the don't get poor slow people, the people who want to just be in it for the long term, and also for the technology and for the ideology and everything.
I agree with that. Yes, I do agree with that. Maybe to add to that, probably the second thing that that should be mentioned here is Bitcoin being still very hard to understand. This is why you basically still, regardless, there being a lot of pretty user-friendly solutions and a lot of documentations, a lot of podcasts, websites, videos about Bitcoin. Bitcoin is still pretty hard and complex to understand. And it creates some sort of a threshold for people. Even if you're there for easy money, you still need to pass the threshold of understanding where the easy money come from in Bitcoin, because there are many traders that are there for the easy money and the fast ones. So the human greed is not actually a bad thing to have. But in Bitcoin, there's still this the line which people need to cross and to be educated enough to start doing something. Whereas in Ethereum community and in others, there's nothing on that. Like 16-year-old guy can come over and buy some tokens and then sell them, and boom, he has some money, or he lost everything he had and his parents' money. Mm-hmm. So it depends very much. And probably the third thing is the philosophy, because Bitcoin's philosophy, if you ask me, is still built around the individual, not the collective, not the society, not actually the community. You basically, in Bitcoin, you have a lot of different agents, but they are pretty free, they're sovereign, and if they want to interact with some other peer, they would do it themselves. They do not become a part of the common blockchain. They do not become a part of a group of, I don't know, master nodes as in Dash or Zcash. They are no that. So basically the mindset is shifted to the individual, to one node, one person, one sovereign point, and not through to the narrative of what is good for the collective, what is good for the whole blockchain. And it's not, Bitcoin is less, much less collectivistic than every other community is. Although it's still a community, but not as socialistic, not as weak, I can say, probably not as simple, but more complex than Ethereum one.
Exactly. And because of this, everyone who comes into the Bitcoin community maybe has a little rough start, because the ones who are into it already for a couple of years, they question a lot, and they, yeah, you know, they're not there for, oh, everybody coming in, you know,
exactly. But
they really also want people to understand a little bit. That's also what we try. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we are here, like Relay is here, to attract as many people as possible that are not into Bitcoin yet too, because we just are so convinced that we want to convince other people about it as well. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, we also try really require them to learn a little bit about it. That's what we do, why we do this podcast, why we do our blogs, why we do so many learning material things, because we also accept people who come into this, they need to know how to store their keys, or they kind of need to know why Bitcoin is not a get rich quick scheme or a Ponzi scheme or whatever, but mm-hmm. it is a new form of money and a better way to store value for the long run. So we want people to understand these principles so that they also not expect different things that they then get from Bitcoin, because the only thing that you get from Bitcoin is the best store of value, which is not it is a lot, but it's also the only thing you get from it right now. You're not getting, you know,
Well, with RGB, I understood, and I've been facing the situation where probably the threshold in Bitcoin, you know, there's this meme that Bitcoiners are very toxic, and this is exactly what probably you just described. People that have been in Bitcoin, they start questioning all the newbies, they start criticizing them, they start you know how this happens. Probably RGB with this regards is even more toxic, because the technology is very complex, and the values that we try to preserve are even more hardcore cypherpunk and individualistic that many people from Bitcoin community have right now. And we do have a couple of conflicts every now and then, a couple of disputes from people that come to us and start asking questions, and we get accused of being too toxic. We get accused of being too closed and not willing to provide any educational information, or not being opened enough to answer, for example, the same question, what is RGB, over and over and over again. But this is kind of true, because without being toxic, without having this threshold of first you do something yourself and then you come to us with questions. I mean, Bitcoin never had an FAQ website. Bitcoin never had any educational material, like anything at all. You had a couple of emails, had a couple of specifications, that was it. And yet Bitcoin has evolved without losing the threshold into something great that we have right now. Mm-hmm. So we're following that example. And of course, a lot of people, they are very angry with us for that. But on the other hand, every single person has the ability to understand what RGB is, because we have bi-weekly calls, dev calls, where we discuss we have a Q&A session every time. So regardless the question being smart, complex, or simple and stupid, we're answering all of that. We have a YouTube channel with a lot of our presentations, a lot of explanations. We have a repository with PDF slides. We have an RGB FAQ website. So we're working on that. But we're still leaving this, we're still cherishing this threshold, and we're still forcing people to first do their homework and put some effort, like create some kind of proof of work that they need, they want somehow to understand RGB, and they're willing to pay the price with their time, with their effort to read the code, with their effort to read the website. And then we're willing to put more time from our side to educating them. So yeah,
that also makes sense. You know, it always depends on the stage of a project. And I think as we have seen in Bitcoin itself, when it was founded to released to 2008-09, at the beginning it's probably counterproductive if too many people jump on it. It's
exactly.
Probably good if a small circle of people who really understand it on a very deep level just work on it as full time as possible, instead of spending like the majority of time to explain it to newcomers who just because they don't devote basically their whole life to it, obviously will never understand at that deep level. And they also don't have to. I don't have to understand how my laptop works. I don't have to understand how my car works. And yet I'm able to use it. Maybe that was even the problem a little bit of Ethereum, that they got too much attention too early. And then, you know, then you get this market pressure. If you launch DeFi and then, you know, billions are flowing into it, and before it's probably still an MVP, and you know, you have to educate people and everything, and you don't have the resource to do that. Same in startup, you know, if you run a startup, you don't want to have too much attention before the project is actually ready to handle like millions of users, for example.
And this is exactly why when people ask us why do not we do more marketing of RGB, because they understand that the technology is huge and everything that we're doing is like awesome and it can be a real breakthrough. Like, why aren't you talking about it like everywhere? This is exactly why, because too much attention and too much pressure can kill the project, and we want to preserve it. We do not want to get it killed by too much pressure from marketing guys, from businesses, from startups, from anything. We'd rather keep it low right now and market it more when it's ready and talk about it more when it's ready, and now keep it just for the ears of those that understand and want to work with RGB in the first place. And then when it's ready, it would be better to show examples also of how the technology can actually be used. Because, for example, RGB is an open source technology. It's there. Everyone who wants to get to know it can go to the repos, can go to the FAQ website and find all the information you have that is possibly there about the protocol. And it's governed by, overseen by the nonprofit Swiss Association, actually in Zug. And we called it LNPBP Standards Association. LNPBP stands for, as you mentioned, rephrasing of the TCP/IP Internet Protocol. So you basically use Lightning Network protocols on top of Bitcoin protocol, as you could use the TCP/IP, the TCP/IP and IP1. But we also have a Swiss but for-profit company, and I'm one of the founders there. And aside from sponsoring the development of RGB, aside from actually programming RGB and donating then all the code to the association, we're building right now a couple of user-facing products, which, as you also mentioned previously, would allow many people to start using RGB without knowing how RGB actually works. It would be just a showcase. It would be like a good car, but you would be able to use it without knowing what's inside this car, if you don't want to know it again. So this is what we're also focusing on right now, just to bring some examples. And a lot of these, the products that we're working on would be done in collaboration with many other wonderful Bitcoin projects. So basically, by this action, we would be A, bringing first products to the market, and to give people tools and give developers tools to work with RGB without having this like huge tension and huge first meeting blockers. And we would also, as RGB is a very disruptive technology, I hate this word, but it is, a lot of businesses, they do not understand how to actually monetize things on RGB. Like, yeah, there's this huge technology, like what can I do with it? So by working and collaborating with many other projects, by building products in RGB, we're setting an example for others on how they can monetize their ideas on RGB. Because we can keep talking about how it can be done, how the technology can be applied, how money can flow more into some startup or something like that. But before we show it, no one would believe it. No one would understand it. So it's better just to do the work, show an example, and then the market will follow.
I think that's a great strategy. Thank you very much, Olga. I really learned a lot today, and I'm really, really pumped of what you guys will be releasing on top of the Bitcoin protocol by the end of this year, beginning of next year. We the whole Relay community, I'm sure we will follow this very closely now, and I'm looking forward to your release, and hopefully still a little bit of a launch communication or whatever, or at least I'm sure we will keep in touch, because I think we could be exactly one of these startups that that, you know, we could collaborate maybe on some interesting product on top of the Bitcoin network. So yeah, really, really happy to have you in the Swiss Bitcoin ecosystem, and looking forward to talk to you again. Thank you very much for taking
thank
the
time. You very much for inviting me. It was a pleasure.
Cool. Thank you. Cheers, Olga. Bye. Cheers. Thank you.
Bye. Thanks. We'll be right back.